Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that can take the despair, but it's the hope it can't stand. My name's Corey Hazelhurst, and my partner of propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hello, Corey.
So we've come back from a long day out of the nuclear bunker doing some door knocking for Steve McCabe. Hashtag stick with Steve. We've added air conditioning to the nuclear bunker because Donald Trump has pulled the US out of the Paris Climate Change Agreement. So it's been quite a busy week all round.
Yeah, it has been a bit stressful.
We're, in this episode, going to talk about the state of the election race as it moves into the final stretches. We've talked a lot about Labour in the episode so far. We've talked a lot about Jeremy Corbyn in the episode so far. I suppose mainly because Labour is the party that we're a member of, and I think you can always get a bit obsessed with how your own side is doing. What we're going to do in this one, though, is look at the state of the Tory campaign, which has been widely thought to be fairly useless. But with them still having a fairly solid lead in the polls, does it really matter? It's not just us as blinkered partisan lefties that have said that the Tory campaign is useless. Quentin Letts in the Mail called Theresa May a glumbucket. Rod Liddell said it was the worst Tory campaign you could remember. And it's even more thoughtful broadsheet types. So Alex Massey, who's one of the more thoughtful conservative writers, he's called Theresa May the Tories' Gordon Brown. So Steve, how has the Conservative campaign been so bad?
I think it initially starts off from the fact that no one was expecting this ever since she became Prime Minister, saying we're not going to have a general election, we're not going to have a general election, we're not going to have a general election. And then she decides when she's gone walking in the middle of Wales that actually she wants a general election. That surprise, change of mind, means that Conservative, the CCHQ was caught off on the back foot, and I think this shows quite a bit in a number of different areas. So there were reports that initially CCHQ was struggling to fill some seats because they'd had a clear out of the approved parliamentary candidates list, and because no one was expecting an election so soon, they hadn't filled it up again yet. Likewise, I think this can also be seen in the Conservative manifesto, where I think the lack of costings on a number of different policies, in fact across most of the entire manifesto, can be viewed as just not necessarily having the time to really go into the detail that would otherwise be required in this. And given that a number of these policies are new and they're not just continuations of policies from the Cameron and Osborne era, that legwork hasn't been done. And, you know, they're suffering because of it.
The manifesto is a really interesting one because not only were there no costings, but there were also no consultations as well. So we recorded our podcasts on social care before the U-turn, which then Theresa May said wasn't a U-turn and says nothing has changed. In a kind of slightly strangled, desperate way where you realise everything has changed, but she just didn't really want to admit it. If we're looking at why the Tory campaign has been so rubbish. So Lynton Crosby's been brought in to run it like he did with the 2015 campaign. Theresa May, like she did as Home Secretary, she's relied on a small group of advisors. She's relied on Nick Timothy, she's relied on Fiona Hill. Now, there's no ministers in this inner circle. It's not like Cameron and Osborne. It's not like Blair and Brown and Prescott.
It's not like with the coalition where you had the kitchen cabinet
and the quad. Yeah, with Nick Clegg, Danny Alexander and what have you. It's people who are advisors and probably see themselves maybe a little above the fray a little bit. We said when we recorded the other podcast on social care that it looked like Theresa May thought, well, we can just take the political hit now for the U-turn on policy on social care, rather than have it when Labour might be revitalised in the polls. That might have been the calculation, but it looks like it was more haphazard than that, because by all accounts, no ministers were actually consulted. Jeremy Hunt, the health minister, wasn't consulted about it before it went out.
Yeah, it looks like in the case of the social care policy, this is a classic example of Theresa May's advisor, Nick Timothy, trying to be a bit too clever by half and screwing it up. You tried to shoehorn in a solution to social care funding without proper consultation, without proper costing, well, ineffectively with calculations on the back of a fag packet. And lo and behold, suddenly it falls apart under press scrutiny, like most policies that haven't been thought through properly do.
Yeah, and that seems to be a bit of the turning point in the campaign, that we're not really going to talk about the polls much in this one, but you can see a definite narrowing of the Tory lead. I suppose because it's never really good to have a U-turn. Maybe it's good to have a quick U-turn rather than a slow U-turn. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a big political price being paid. Not maybe necessarily among the voters. Political Betting did an interesting post saying that the Tory lead among older voters still seems to be fairly
consistent.
Yeah, it's not really changed. It's still, they're still 50 points ahead. I think where it maybe does change, maybe we should speak about this later, is Theresa May's reputation in her party. I think you're right, they're being a bit too clever by half. They thought that running this election would be easy. Actually, it turns out running a general election campaign is quite difficult.
Yeah.
They maybe should have asked Cameron about that in 2010, when probably maybe a similar thing happened, where the Tories were 15, 20 points ahead going into the polls. And then Cleggmania happens, the polls narrow, and there's the Tories don't even get a majority. And something similar seems to be happening this time. I think the Tories have made the same mistake, or Theresa May has made the same mistake in this election, maybe as Yvette Cooper, Liz Kendall and Andy Burnham did in 2015. And they wrote Jeremy Corbyn off and took it for granted that they would be, this 20-point lead would go into the campaign because he's been so useless as opposition leader. And what they forget was that actually Jeremy Corbyn is a very effective campaigner. What he's shown from his two leadership campaigns is he's good at speeches, he's good at campaigns, and I know now we're talking about Corbyn, we're meant to be talking about the Tory campaign. But I think that complacency actually means that they thought, oh, well, we don't need to cost our manifesto. We don't need to think through these policies. We don't need to go and do any TV debates. And it all has unravelled quite quickly.
I mean, I think there's almost a flip side to that as well, in that the lack of campaigning experience in Theresa May's inner circle is also stemming from the fact that she's cut out an awful lot of the Tory big beasts and you know, I say old guard as though, like, you know, Cameron in the Osborne era was decades ago. But the likes of Michael Gove, Ken Clark, are very effective and have been around the block in a number of different ways. They've been involved at the top of the Tory party for quite some time. And they've been completely shunned by the current Conservative leadership and just been cut out of all decision making, banished to the back benches, and, you know, more or less completely ignored unless they're causing trouble, like Nicky Morgan has been in some areas. Yeah. When you're not utilising your full breadth of talent, when you're losing, actually, for all a lot of his reputation was in some ways overblown, when you're losing George Osborne from Parliament, and George Osborne is going from Parliament to being a major newspaper editor, and he's not very friendly to you, that's going to be problematic for you, at a minimum. And you've lost his experience and you've gained somebody in a position of power and authority who's not going to be very kind for you. See his evidence pretty much every single headline that the Evening Standard has been run since Osborne took over properly. So there's just an awful lot of potential talent which would otherwise have been involved. And it's not just in terms of MPs, it's in terms of their special advisors, it's in terms of their campaign staff and backroom staff as well. And they're just not being utilised, despite the fact that they're the ones who have been through this all before.
When Theresa May did that reshuffle after she became Prime Minister, it sounds like she put a lot of store on loyalty, and loyalty to the Conservative Party in that referendum campaign. Now, it's very hard to remember because it feels so long ago, listeners, but the referendum campaign was a somewhat fraught affair, and there were a few bun fights had, both across Britain and in the Conservative Party in particular. Mm-hmm. And so what Theresa May did after that reshuffle is get rid of a lot of the Tory ministers who were seen as being involved on some of the so-called blue-on-blue action. So that's why people like Anna Sowerby left the cabinet. It's why people like Nicky Morgan left the cabinet.
It's why Gove ended up going partially as well. Yeah. And it's why Osborne ended up going as well. Or one of the reasons Osborne ended up leaving.
And also it's why people like, say, Andrea Leadsom stayed in the cabinet. Because although she was quite heavily involved in the campaign, she wasn't heavily involved in criticising other Conservatives. Apparently also May took Osborne into 10 Downing Street and said that he needed to think more about loyalty, which I think is something that Osborne's thought about and thought,
screw that.
Yeah. That's why, I mean, we've talked about Michael Gove. It looks like the Govester, he's been actually doing the media rounds for Theresa May, and there's some talk that he might return from the cabinet. Maybe it's just from Michael Gove himself proving he's journalists, but the talk is out there. And actually, one of the things that's interesting, and again, maybe shows that the Tory campaign is coming off the rails a little bit, the lack of diversity in those people who are coming out to bat for Theresa May. So yes, there's Michael Gove, but he's not in the cabinet. Philip Hammond, capable media performer and arch bore that he is, we haven't seen him at all. And I don't know if that's because there was a national insurance U-turn and maybe there was I don't know this, but maybe there was some thought that his people were briefing against Theresa May, and that maybe they had to do this. Because of that, she's thinking of ditching him in the next reshuffle. So she doesn't want Philip Hammond to be a big part of the campaign. But we had Michael Fallon today announcing tax policy. Now, he's the defence minister. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it makes even less sense when you consider that Michael Fallon, whilst he's a very, you know, effective media communicator, there's been a couple of instances during this campaign where people have gotten the one-up on him. I think it was Krishnan Guruneshi on Channel 4, for instance, was... Well, Fallon was basically laying into various people in Labour, and Murphy was just basically quoting back at him Conservative Party members such as David Davis, Boris Johnson, and people like that, and basically saying, well, they said the exact same thing, so how is it acceptable for them to hold that view but not for Jeremy Corbyn? And he didn't really have a response, because clearly it was all just a political angle rather than anything actually meaningful. But yeah, the absence of people like Philip Hammond is quite shocking. And the fact that, you know, Theresa May herself isn't making herself very publicly available in this campaign makes it even more shocking that these people aren't being, you know, the wider cabinet doesn't seem to be being used that much.
No, and it's, again, it's one of those things that shows that this was a rushed election job not thought through. Because, and I'm still not going to repeat the Tory attack line, because, you know, we've had our media training, but if you're going to make your campaign about leadership and your leadership as a focus, you can't then spend the whole campaign not doing TV debates. You can't send Justin Greene to do Woman's Hour after Jeremy Corbyn screws up and they think that maybe they'll be a bit tougher to you. Apparently Theresa May was called Submarine May in the Home Office because she would disappear whenever there was trouble. Now, maybe you can do that if you're Home Secretary and want a Sergeant Major, but if you're Prime Minister, you're head of the team. They made a big play of this at the start of the campaign, and now it's being ridiculed, and it is, I think, getting through to the focus groups as well.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the reasons that the Conservative campaign is faring as poorly as it is. Theresa May actually isn't that good at this sort of thing.
And doesn't like doing it, because apparently when she was a parliamentary candidate, she would also pull out of hustings.
And again, I think it's one of those situations where if Theresa May had actually had to go through a full, you know, leadership election against a decent opponent, i.e. not Andrea Leadsom, you know, somebody who might have actually been able to give her a bit of a run for her money, you know, you would probably have seen her crumble quite quickly based on what we're seeing as part of this campaign. In being Prime Minister in the modern age and not being comfortable talking to Women's Hour, that's just daft. Just because, you know, the media are always going to give you a tough time. That's part and parcel of the gig. You may not like it. You may feel that the media is unfair. Well, the media is always going to be unfair. Their job isn't to be nice to you. It's to hold you to account. And sometimes they will do that in an unfair way. All in all, I think basically it just boils down to a lot of this, that Theresa May's political antennae isn't as sharp as it should have been or could have been potentially. And I think that kind of almost waterfalls down into all the other things we've discussed. That lack of antenna means that she's surrounded herself with only a few people who have then fed into things which have then gone wrong. It means she's excluded other people from the decision-making process, which means that nobody's got the buy-in, which means they don't necessarily want to go out there and defend things, especially when you've got situations like the so-called dementia tax and the social care plan. You know, you had Conservative ministers going out there and defending the policy, and then 24 hours later, a U-turn was announced.
And the same with the immigration cap, where there's been very conflicting messages about, is the 100,000 figure a target? Is it an aspiration?
Is it a policy?
How much does it cost? Well, no one knows. In terms of maybe how it gets back on track, Linton Crosby has a phrase apparently where you get all the barnacles off the boat. Essentially, you strip away all the extraneous bits of the campaign and you get it back on the core message. So in 2015, that was long-term economic plan. It was coalition of chaos. It seems to me that the Tories aren't attacking Jeremy Corbyn as virulently as they were. They aren't really going down the Theresa May's team as much as they were. Maybe because I think the public were a bit sick of them. It's one thing having the same message you repeat all over and over again, but actually I don't think the message is hitting through, and I think people think it's a little bit over the top.
Well, I think there's a couple of things in what you said there. I mean, one is there's certainly been almost an abandonment to a certain extent of that whole, and I'm going to use the phrase, strong and stable leadership, I know, under Theresa May.
There's a red light coming in the bunker, Steve. I think media trainers are coming loose.
When you look at the images from the start of the campaign compared to the press released images now, You know, before it was Theresa May's Conservative Party, it's I back May. It's Theresa May front and centre on all the banners, on all of the placards, and all of the signs. Now it's Vote Conservative, the Conservative Party. It's stopped being as presidential. And I think that basically boils down to the fact that, you know, people have seen that she's not actually as strong and stable as she was implying, and therefore to continue utilising that phrase in that way was potentially going to be dangerous. And I think that kind of is links back to that whole but get all the barnacles off the boat, because the boat for this election for the Conservatives was that strong and stable leadership. Now, yes, when you look at the demographic breakdowns of who supports who and where the leadership standings are, Theresa May still has a lead over Jeremy Corbyn. But it's gone down, and that's going to be the result of all of that, those of all of the relative screw-ups that seem to have happened. Now, the other thing I want to touch on is that you said that the Conservatives haven't been attacking Jeremy Corbyn as much. Well, actually, they have. They've just been doing it in a very subtle way, and that they've effectively been doing it via social media through paid advertising. Right. Now, I think we touched on this as a potential area where you know, electoral law would need to be updated when we were discussing the failure of the CPS to charge anybody at the time over the Tory election expenses. Now, obviously, since then, Craig McKinley, the MP for South Thanet, has been charged, as has his agent, as has somebody from CCHQ. Obviously, ongoing thing, we don't know the details, and without being funny at this point, if we were to start going into detail of it, we could be held in contempt of court, which is not something we want to do because we're both too pretty for prison.
We're not that publicity hungry just yet, listeners.
Yeah. But the Conservatives are going very heavily on anti-Corbyn messages on Facebook and social media, particularly on YouTube. Now, there is a video which I have seen doing the rounds, being that I live in a marginal constituency, which is one of the number one targets for the Conservatives, not just in the region, I think nationally as well.
I imagine nationally. I think I've seen the one that you're talking about.
Yeah, and it is all anti-Jeremy Corbyn and linking him to the IRA, linking him to various very unpopular positions that he's held over the years. And all they're doing is literally taking quotes of him and video. It's a very, very effective political message. And when you look at the number of times it's been viewed on Facebook, it's been viewed something like millions of times, something like 3 or 4 million when I last looked, which is bloody impressive, to be quite honest. I dread to think how much money they'd have had to spend on that. It's likely to be very effective, and as they're only focusing it on marginals, well, most people aren't going to see it. So I don't think they are cutting down on their attacks on Jeremy Corbyn. I think they're just doing it more segmented, and I think they're just segmenting their targeting, and I think they're trying to do it as not under the radar isn't quite right, because that involves that they're trying to hide the fact they're doing it, that they're not trying to hide the fact they're doing it. It's just that because of the nature of social media targeting, when you're paying for these things, you, unless you're in those areas, you're not going to see them.
That's a good point. That social media targeting is something we have talked about on podcasts before, which if you subscribe to us on iTunes, you can find it in our back catalogue about politics on social media. And it'll be interesting to see what effect that has on the campaign. We are going to be back with you on Tuesday with our 50th episode, and we're going to be talking about democracy and what issues in democratic reform are in the manifesto. Then probably Wednesday or Thursday, we're going to be out with our predictions, and we'll see, well, all of this stuff in the Tory campaign, all of this uselessness, does it matter? Will the Tories get a majority anyway? We'll do that predictions then. You can follow me on Twitter at PaperbackWriter.
I'm at Centre Radical.
And the theme tune of Not Enough Champagne is Plucky Good Times by Dave Depper, and our logo was designed by James Cram. You can follow him on Twitter at James Cram. We'll speak to you soon.
See ya.